If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Pixel Sift. Each week we go into the world of video games and explore the issues that matter to you. I'm joined for another episode by my co-hosts Mitch and Scott.
Hello.
Hey, hey.
And in the studio this week we have got the developer of a brand new game coming out next week. His name is Oscar Britton and the game's World's Fastest Pizza. Say hi, Oscar.
Hi.
So fast.
Yeah. The world's fastest.
The fastest.
And also Bath Time Exorcist as well, which we'll be talking a little bit about later in the show. Mitch, everyone's been talking about something this week.
Seems to be talking about UWP, or Universal Windows Platform, this week. And people are pretty upset about it, so we'll be addressing that.
We'll also be talking about launch day hiccups, games that had issues at launch that could potentially hinder your day one experience.
All that and more coming up on episode 23 of Pixel Sift.
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
So joining us in the studio this week for our second ever live guest in the studio, we've got Oscar.
Is it only our second?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay. And almost 10
Sloppy
episodes
ago. Seconds.
Yeah, oh. There we go.
Good
second
start.
Comes
Good
right
start.
After first. Yeah. Oscar Britton, and he's just made a new game. Well, kind of been working on a game for a fair while, but is just about to release a game called World's Fastest Pizza, and has also worked on a game that has been getting a bit of excitement across the internet for the Global Game Jam in 2016, called Bath Time Exorcist, and he did it right here at Murdoch University during that wing.
Yeah, I did. You didn't ask me a question.
Yeah, that was a bit of an intro.
So, a nice lead-in.
Yeah, so sorry about that.
So tell us a little bit about your game and what is it like if people are out there in radio land and they don't know what it looks like. Can you explain a bit how you would play World's Fastest Pizza?
So World's Fastest Pizza it's top-down. People look at screenshots when nothing's happening and they're like, oh yeah, it's just Hotline Miami, man. What's special about that? But it's a lot more like something like Binding of Isaac or like Nuclear Throne or something, except that you don't inflict violence on anyone. So the idea is you're a pizza man from another planet and you have to deliver pizzas. So all the levels, like, randomize different elements of them, and then they take about like 2 seconds to complete. And yeah, you just delivered pizza basically, and everyone's trying to kill you. So.
Are they all completely like random, or do they have like certain set of rules that certain things are only going to appear in?
Yeah, there's a few like some levels. Like, the game has been kind of, I've been testing it for so long and giving it out for free on the internet and stuff for so long that I've just been doing it. It's like one giant kind of beta test basically. So there's like some levels where I'm like, all right, just dogs don't work on this level, so remove them and stuff like that. And then other levels I'm like, oh, this level actually does really well if there's twice as many enemies as there should be at this point in the game, but because it's an open space, they're less likely, you know, you can get away from them easier. So there's a lot of balancing actually that I've done, which I didn't realize until the other day. I was like going through all the levels, making sure everything was right, and I was like, oh, this level has like 5 times the amount of enemies in it that this other level does, but it doesn't feel that hard.
Way.
Yeah. So, yeah. What I really like about it is like you can 1 minute it's just okay, you park outside and you just walk to the door and job done, and then the next minute you're on Mars being chased by crocodiles and missiles.
But was it Mars or
was it Mars?
The Outback.
It's just the Outback.
Okay.
It's a bit
like, well,
gators
I interpreted
and stuff.
It as Mars.
Welcome
it was
to your country, man.
I really liked the kind of the fast pacedness of it. I guess you don't, before you even know, you're like deep in the game. I really loved it. And like, how long? Both this game came out of the game jams. Yeah, how many people are involved in the actual initial
world's fastest pizza?
Yeah, I mean, let's start with that one.
Yeah. Wait, sorry. What was it? Wait, were you asking how many
mixed
people?
Up? Yeah. The initial idea. How many people are involved? Was
in
it
world's
just
fastest pizza? Yeah, I was house sitting my parents' house. They'd gone away for a week, and me and my brother were just sitting around, and I was like, you know what? Someone should make a game about delivering pizza. That was basically it. And I had.
Were you waiting for a pizza?
We might have been waiting for a pizza, actually. I watched it. I don't know if you've seen Fat Pizza. Have you seen Fat
Pizza?
Yeah,
I'm very familiar.
We're all on board with Fat Pizza.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I might have watched that and been like, that would make a really good game, because I kind of had this idea for ages of making a game that. Like, was episodic, but not in its delivery of, like, oh, every couple of months you get an episode or something. But, like, the idea of an episodic game that just generates an episode every time you play it. And then you play that episode and then be like, oh, that's enough, I'm going to bed or whatever.
Yeah, So the level design seems very chaotic. Are they randomly generated, or are they do you design each level?
Yeah, okay. So each level was, yeah, like... I've designed like each level. There's a couple that actually do randomly generate. So there's like a very, very basic algorithm that like means that there's like an end point and stuff. But yeah, most of them just have like things like certain cars and like objects will go in certain places. The types of enemies randomize like somewhat. The location that you've got to deliver the pizza to changes. But part of... And this sounds like the worst idea ever. Actually, part of like getting better at the game is actually memorizing some of the levels.
Okay.
But they're so it's a speed running
game, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I
beat it in like 3 minutes the other day.
Nice. Well, I feel like that kind of like memorizing tactics and stuff is really part of that whole retro styling. Like a lot of those old games, the way that you beat them was to, you know, memorize, you know, when to jump and when to whatever.
Yeah, I think like.
It's part of the appeal.
What I don't like about those, though, is memorizing, like, oh, there's an enemy that there's no way that I could physically have... Like, I've got to die to this enemy first before I can beat it, and I hate that. Mm. Like, I hate memorizing, like, in Mega Man, like, I've always hated, like, oh, I know the bees are coming at this... There's the bees, and then I know where they come from, and then you shoot them. It's like, that's not fun. But with World's Fastest Pizza, I'm like, all right, you're going to memorize the layout of the map, and then you're going to memorize like which parts have changed like since last time you were there, and you're like, oh, this car wasn't there last time, so like cars will like block off certain paths and things, so you've got to like memorize that kind of thing. And then the thing that will always be different is just like all the enemies. So you might get there one time and it'll be like dogs, and you just have like packs of dogs chasing you. Another time it'll be, you know, rocket launcher guys chasing you.
And that's really great, because like unlike some of those retro games, it's probably got a lot more legs.
Yeah.
And as far as keeping people interested,
one of the coolest things I reckon about it is that it's got such an Australian flavour to it. Some people have called it a culturally relevant sort of game. But yeah, I mean, it has got a real Australian sort of... Like, it's got that
flavor
Australian
to it.
Joke
yeah.
to it,
yeah.
basically. And I think for a lot of games that get made, people don't really... You know, they're trying to make a game that would be... You know, big on a world stage and kind of applicable to everyone. But it's nice that you've got some nice sort of culturally specific local WA sort of things.
There was something actually today. I was going through the finalizing some of the Steam page stuff, and I had in like the description, I'm like, oh, you'll be chased by, you know, rednecks or something. I'm like, I've never used the word redneck. And I was like, but no one's going to know what a bogan is.
Yeah.
So I had to like.
You've got Australia and New Zealand that know what bogans
are. Yeah,
basically.
I had to make this call. I'm like, if I'm like, you're chased by bogans, people are like, is that some kind of mythical creature? Yeah.
I think an American audience would interpret that as like a different kind of
It's a different
enemy entirely.
Maybe you could have like region specific releases.
Yeah. I guess maybe
you could put like a bunyip in there or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
people don't
that's
know
gonna
what
be more confusing
is,
for them.
Yeah, but like, you know,
bunyip's Australian too.
Yeah, they are.
So when you designed it though, did you put it in specifically because you wanted to have those Australian elements, or is that just what happened when you were making it?
It's kind of funny. Like initially, it was I was like, Fat Pizza's pretty great, and I just kind of like tried to get as much of that in there, because that's basically what it was. Is this little game jam thing where I tried to do that, but then I actually made it just sort of just wacky, non-specific, and I was like, oh yeah, but it's set in Australia. Like, you just say that because it's kind of, a lot of the levels could be anywhere, you know. But then kind of as I went along, I realized like there was like one point there was like a power up that you got, which was just a monkey follows you around, and I was like, ah, so great, everyone likes monkeys. And then I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm making a koala bear. That's like the best thing ever. And then, like, I'm not joking. I updated the build, changed the sprite to like a little koala sprite. Every Let's Player that like played it from then on would like do the same thing where they'd just be like, oh, sweet, I got a koala. I'll try and do an American. It's like, oh, sweet, I got a koala bear. That's so amazing. And then the koala, like, would die or something. They'd be like, no. And they'd name it. They always named it, like, Steve the koala or something. They'd be like, Steve, no. And then they'd do, like, a flashback with, like, the piano song, the sad music. They'd be like, Steve. And like every one of them did it, and I was like,
"That's awesome!"
That's about. And it was like, I put it in there. I was like, "I bet they all do this." Yeah. They all did it. It was
just
great.
Gotta get on the old cultural money bag there.
But it's kind of funny, like, because you're like, it. The monkey looked more like a monkey. It's top down, so things are kind of hard to draw. Mm. The monkey looked probably better, and I just like monkeys as well more than I like. I've never even seen a koala bear, and I was like, you know what, like, koala bear, like, people will like them. Like,
but I think that just that kind of consideration is a part of the appeal of the game. Like, it's simplicity but done really, really well. Like, even you know, going next door to the cop station, they're constantly updating, you know, the wanted sign and stuff like that.
Now targeting,
you know, little bits of like that really kind of increase the appeal of the game.
There's a spot right outside of like Dunsborough Margaret River where they always have one of those signs, and that immediately what I thought of when I sort of that side of, like, this takes me straight there.
Look, that's another joke from Fat Pizza.
It
actually.
Is. Yeah,
I just
actually,
stole it straight from Fat Pizza.
You can check out Oscar's game. It's at worldsfastestpizza.com. It comes out on Steam on the 15th of March, and we've actually got a couple of copies to give away that you can get just for entering our competition. Basically, you just need to visit pixelsift.com.au/pizza. You can also get it by retweeting or sharing our post on Facebook and basically telling us about what your ideal or perfect pizza is. We will announce the winners for that in next week's show.
Nice.
Visit us on pixelsift.com.au.
Universal Windows Platform. Some of the biggest developers in the world have been talking about this, causing a bit of a fuss about this particular thing. We are going to have a little bit of a chat about what it is and why people might be getting a bit upset about this particular thing, and what it would mean for people who play games on computer, potentially like people who want to install games like World's Fastest Pizza.
So, if you were to take advantage of UWA, what would you put in World's Fastest
Pizza? UWP.
UWP. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've said something different written here.
That's okay.
And UWA is the Universal Windows app, so that's what you would download from the UWP.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Right.
And it confused me because I go to...
I was confused, yeah. I've got an article I'm referencing here. So what would you put in World's Fastest Pizza? What do you think?
Would I put it on the Universal Windows platform? I mean... Sure, I guess. I mean, Tim Sweeney.
He's pretty against it.
Yeah, and
understandably so.
Understandably, and it's, I kind of saw that, and I was like, wow, he's come out swinging, and I was like, you know, this is kind of like how environmentalists come out, and they're like, we need to stop climate change, because in 100 years, we could have, you know, 5 degrees of climate change, and it's like, and that will be huge. It hasn't happened yet, and you're like, well,
better nip it
in
the bud.
And people, yeah, and it's like, yeah, you don't want to, but with video games and technology, we always seem to, like,
his article,
let it get bad, and then
yeah.
I mean, his article is really well written, and he makes a lot of good points, and he does kind of credit Microsoft at points by saying, you know, like, they can have their own app store, and they tried to approach him about, you know, this and that, but at the end of the day, you know, monopolizing of any market's not great.
Well, the big criticism that we probably haven't clarified really here is that this new platform that Microsoft wants to bring in means that certain features may be withheld from apps if they don't include them in, or apps and programs if they don't include this particular framework. But the requirement at the moment is that they have to be distributed through the Windows Store, which comes through Windows 10. And it means stores like Steam, or going on to other websites like itch.io, for example, or any of the other ones, means that if someone tries to install an app from there, you're either going to miss out on the features, or it's going to throw up a thing saying this is an unrecognized developer, and we don't know if this can be trusted or not. So, you know, that stops people from buying things, and it's going to hurt people who make small low-level games who don't have the huge amount of money behind them to put it onto these big stores.
Yeah, I would like to know exactly what these features are, because let's say if, like, it's a feature that's only specific to the Microsoft app users, the person that just plays Steam games probably may not even care, because they might be specific features that only benefit the person that is really invested in the infrastructure of Microsoft.
Yeah.
And the person that's been using Steam their whole life may not care because those features don't matter to them.
It could also be. So at the moment, it means that some of these apps, for example, I think Tomb Raider is one of the ones that you can play on that. Quantum Break, which is going to be coming out soon. But they've got very limited level access to other bits in your software. So that means you can't use lots of the extra graphics drivers and all those sort of things.
Right.
But
okay.
I mean, they could flip that situation and say that only things that are running through the Windows Store can have access to hardware acceleration and all this sort of stuff. So that means that if you don't go through them and take a 30% cut of, or you know, they have to pay a 30% cut to Microsoft in order to sell it on that store, you could lose out.
So. But at the end of the day, like, are we looking at things like, for example, console-specific content, for example? Like, I know a lot of things on Destiny, for example, like, as just one thing I know of, a lot of things on Destiny can't be accessed by Xbox users. So is that something that, I mean, is it just shifting the argument to a different infrastructure or environment?
I guess that's the big argument. Apple already does this. They
exactly,
have a store
yeah.
Called the App Store, and they basically sign developers in terms of you know, putting stuff out there. And the whole idea is that, you know, people don't put dodgy programs on there to, you know, lose access to your computer or corrupt things or crypto lockers and all
that
sort of stuff.
That's part of the problem though. Like, PC are kind of, you know, a little bit more open. You've got a lot more choices. You've got a lot more options in every facet of, I guess, computering and gaming, etc. And I think this just kind of is taking a little bit of options and power away from people.
Isn't that sort of one of the defining factors of Windows, is that it's not Mac?
That's true. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, great, it's open. I can do whatever I want with my content.
And that's the big argument that people make for like the PC master race, basically, that if you're playing on something like a console, for example, you have to kind of accept the certain compromises.
Does everyone... Sorry, I just interrupted you. But it's kind of funny. Like, it seems like this is... Because the people who are getting most upset about this are obviously in the gaming industry. But it is something that they obviously want to roll out to everything, not just games. And everyone in the gaming industry seems to have some major, like, long-term memory problems, because, like, does everyone remember games for Windows where they did, like, the same thing and it sucked and it went away really quickly? Like, it's not going to catch on and it'll just go away. And then they did the same thing happen. Like, they'll pull an Xbox One, the X-Bone, remember?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty much closed. It's always online. It's got to connect. And then a week later, oh, no one liked it. Okay, no, it goes away. And it just became a normal console.
But that's pretty much it.
Sorry.
Yeah, like, that's it. People are going to be putting their opposition out there now so that they can, exactly as you said earlier with the whole climate change thing, is that you want to try and cut it as quickly as you possible and get this conversation happening so that these unpopular decisions don't quite make it across.
Exactly. It's just the same shit repackaged, you know, like, for people to kind of take notice of it. It needs to be brought to the attention that this is the same thing, and what they're trying to do is the same thing they tried to do before.
Yeah. And it's like, but the thing is, if they nail it, right, if they do it really well and it's a better experience for people, then most people aren't going to care. But if it's a seamless experience like putting a disc in your Xbox is effectively now, then most people aren't going to care whether it's all the background and stuff and where they get it from. But I mean, for us, I know in Australia, it's always difficult when you've got lockdown on particular stores. You know, there are, you know, price considerations that certain stores have for Australia. Steam, for example, has some games which are much more expensive in Australia if you buy through there digitally. And if you only have one store that you can buy things through, well, you're just stuck with whatever price you've got. So, you know, there are arguments for both, and it is something we need to...
I think, like, also in regards to Steam, I remember people talking about Steam when it first came out, and people were up in arms. They didn't like it. They thought, like, oh, Steam's going to, like, lock us out of our games and, like, not allow us to have our games on multiple machines.
Invalidate my discs.
Yeah, and we'll just invalidate the discs, and no one liked that either, and now everyone uses that. So...
Yeah, it's because that was a well-executed kind of, you know, idea, and they haven't gone in a monopolistic, money-hungry way. But, you know, Microsoft hasn't the best reputation as far as this thing is concerned, and I wouldn't be trusting them with my stuff. You know, the digital age has gifted us with all this kind of, you know, peer-to-peer stuff and, you know, direct contact with developers and whatever. And, like, I feel like Microsoft's trying to kind of squash that a little bit and take a bit away from it.
It just comes across as so cynical. Like, when Valve does it, they're like, why? I mean, when Steam came out, it was only for Valve products, right?
Yes.
Initially. Yeah. And everyone was just like, okay, okay. Sure, do what you want, guys. I have to install some client to run your games. I don't care. And then Valve didn't have a monopoly on anything. They didn't distribute anything at that point. They
just made their own stuff, yeah.
Yeah, right? So they just came out, and then they just attracted people to that by making it good. Whereas this Universal Windows thing is, well, if you've got a Mac, you've already got a closed system, so don't worry about it. If you have a Windows computer, then you've only got that choice, so deal with it. Well, and people won't deal with it, and they'll be up in arms, and it'll go away.
I mean, that's the thing as well that actually came out with the Mac. So they bring out the App Store, and then they developed another way that developers can register with a particular key, and you can sign all your things like that as long as that key is fine, and then eventually they can revoke those keys if there's a hacked version of it. We had something very recently where there was like crypto lockers on a Mac, and they just revoked the developer's key, and that was fine. And I think that's what the idea is. It's a safety thing, but we'll have to see how it goes. And
but
I guess
it's been 30 years of Windows building up a brand of, oh my god, we're so much better than Apple because it's so open.
Yeah.
And it's been 30 years of people being like, you know what, we've worked so many systems of getting around viruses, getting around hackers, getting around dodgy programs. There's no...
Yeah.
You're trying to solve something that everyone was kind of like, oh, yeah, well...
Don't fix it if it's not broken.
Like,
exactly right.
It's not a problem for anyone. You just want to make some money. Like,
we'll definitely see how this goes down the track. I'm pretty sure we'll see something, maybe a change of the policy or something like that in the coming weeks.
I'm sure they're going to modify it.
Yeah.
This is not how it will be.
We have not heard the last of this, I'm sure.
Yeah. Episode 24 of Pixel Sift.
Yeah. Oh, they've redressed it all. Let's jump into our next segment.
You're listening to Pixel Sift.
That's right, you're listening to Pixel Sift. You might be watching us online. We have a Twitch channel, which is Pixel Sift. Oh, it's twitch.tv/Pixel Sift.
Yeah.
I always do that around the wrong way. Right now, we are going to be talking a bit about some of the hiccups that come out when you launch a new game and when they go out into the world and the unexpected consequences of not properly thinking everything through. We fired up The Division, which came out earlier in the week, and there was an unfortunate... I guess it's a bug, but it's a bad sort of design decision where there was...
Is it a bug?
Hang on, just let's say what it is, sorry.
It's not really a bug. Yeah. I think they just didn't really consider what the...
No one knows what it is yet.
Yeah. Pretty much. But anyway, in order to progress through the game, you start the game, play for about sort of maybe 5 minutes, and then in order to progress further than that, every person who's in a multiplayer world, so you're all in like a little server on your own, and everyone can run into each other as well.
So they
there's
don't go
collision between players. Yeah. You all have to line up for one laptop. And if you don't make it to that laptop, then you can wait, as I did, up to 30 minutes.
You waited 30 minutes.
Yeah, and I logged out. I restarted the PlayStation. I did many things to try to get this working, and it just absolutely didn't work. And, it kind of really hindered a lot of my experience of the actual game. Because
another thing I kept seeing is, like, GIFs of... Because doorways can only fit one character, and because there's collision... A character can literally put in a doorway, other people can't access that room. People are trapped in that room.
Yeah, and that's exactly that room as well that you go into. Yes. It's a one entrance room. Nobody can even shoot each other because it's like a safe zone as well. So you can't kill everyone
just
to get out of
the
way.
Safe zone.
Do you guys remember that? I think it was Age of Conan where the guy was just on a bridge with a horse, and every time someone tried to get across the bridge, he just bucked the horse and kicked him off, and they died. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Oh my god! Everyone listening, go on YouTube and find that video. It's like horse bucking.
Age of Conan.
I think it was Age of Conan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like everyone laughed at that, and then Ubisoft did it like 10 years later, and you're like, what are you doing?
Just the grieving... in video games.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big criticisms of this was that The Division is a big high-profile game. Two different betas that they had, but they didn't actually test this particular bit when people were playing the game. I mean, surely they should just get like 20 people to fire up the game at once and try start the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's been plenty of other examples of this. Diablo 3, when it came out, had the fabled Era 37, where it basically you couldn't load into the only, the online-only game, effectively. And that was one of the big criticisms that came out when they said, oh yeah, it's only going to be online. There's going to be no single player component to it. And then no one could access the game because the online component fell over.
I mean, same thing happened with that 2013 release of SimCity. We had Drive Club was another big one. Like a driving game basically launched as like an online kind of thing. And they were really good. They had great graphics and whatever. But it was so bad. The service went down for like 3 days when it launched. I mean, Sony pulled their like PS Plus marketing for it, which was pretty heavy. up until that point. It was a bit of a crash. Pun intended.
Also, Master Chief Collection, that had many
issues. The multiplayer in that was basically completely broken.
Apparently it was unplayable. I didn't get a chance to experience it myself, but I've just heard a lot of stories.
I mean, I don't want to rag it out because I know you love it so much, but Destiny, I mean, it had the lack of content to start off with, as well as the network problems it had. And also, you know, that was sort of caused by the DDoS attacks by Lizard Squad, but still hiccups nonetheless.
Yep. I was wondering if these games are just way too
big
complex.
For themselves.
Oh. No, they're just like, that's just something you can't do, guys. You just can't have a game that big and complex and technically amazing because it never bloody works.
So what have you planned out for the launch of World's Fastest Pizza this week?
It's just it's an executable and you download it off Steam.
I guess you haven't got, there's no multiplayer aspect to it as well.
There's nothing.
It's pretty, I think it's usually multiplayer that's the kind of the bit that falls over for people.
All the games we've mentioned, I think, I'll take back what I said about Master Chief Collection. I think the single player was fine. I think local co-op was fine. But as soon as you brought it onto a network and tried to play it between two geographical locations, it just broke.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the Destiny problem was that Street Fighter V had server collapses just like last month or something when it was launching. GTA Online was a huge one. I didn't get going to play that for like days after I wanted. But you're right, they're all network issues. And the biggest issue of all these games is that they're too popular. I mean, is that really a problem? Like,
no,
it's not. But it only becomes a problem when you don't supply the people what they want. It's a supply and demand thing, and there's too much demand and not enough supply.
So what you're saying is that they market these games too much. Well, too many people buy
them. Too many people want them, and too many.
I keep seeing ads for The Division around. I'm like, guys, you're going to run into server issues,
right? Like,
and they did.
There should be like a marketing, server
a sliding scale.
But also, like, with something like the Master Chief Collection or like GTA Online, those had substantial single player campaigns.
That's
that
true.
At least you got that. I mean that's not nothing, but like
I agree,
The Division or Street Fighter. Like, Street Fighter, just it's a menu, that's it. Without it, it's a menu. Like, you can't do anything, and that's not acceptable. Especially, I mean, now you can get Steam refunds, I guess, so you can do that. But
it does make a difference. I mean, these games, so many of these big high-profile games can't launch without a multiplayer component, but you don't know if you're doing the stress test of the thing for buying it out, you know, on the day one. And they put so much incentive into people buying, you know, within the launch week and pre-ordering, and, you know, people don't get what they pay for sometimes. And, it can be really frustrating, especially if you have only got limited time to play games and you'd lined up one day to play it. You can't play it.
So it seems the issue is server technology, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Assassin's Creed Unity had a big heaps of failures as well. That wasn't related to servers, but, besides that... Oh, network
mostly,
problems.
Yeah, and the thing is, those are expensive things to run. If you want to run a bunch of servers, they cost money. And if you don't have that money put aside and ready to kind of scale up as demand needs it, then, you know, it's the first thing that falls over.
I don't think
people are very quick to jump online and say that things aren't working.
Yeah, but there's excuse for AAA games, though, and ones that are marketed so heavily. I don't feel like they would have some kind of idea.
I'm willing to make a concession for GTA Online because I think that GTA 5 was such a polished game. I feel like they wouldn't... Like, I'm going to say Ubisoft, whenever one of their products doesn't work, Ubisoft sucks. That's why. Straight
Call
up.
Call them out.
I'm calling them out. Yeah, they do suck. Come on, their games never work. Like,
and anything that relies on their Uplay service as well.
Uplay sucks. It sucks. It's terrible. To this date, I've never been able to play online Far Cry 4. Just... can't connect to Uplay for some reason, just doesn't work. And the Microsoft one, they probably suck as well. I don't know.
But seriously,
most of these things, like, you look at them and you're like, no, they probably just push this out because these games have to come out on a date. Assassin's Creed has to come out every year. You've got exactly 365 days. You have to do it in that month. You can't even push it back. Things like that.
Otherwise, you miss your launch window.
Yeah, and like then... Uncharted 4. I don't know, but let's call that like a yardstick. If Uncharted 4 comes out and the multiplayer is fine, it's like, right, all these companies are just lazy and greedy. Seriously.
Yeah.
Fair.
And I'm only willing to give GTA and Rockstar and Take Two like a concession on that because
it is primarily a single player game.
It's primarily a single player game, and they also that game was, how many years? It was like 5 or 6 years before the previous one. I think it was like, all
right,
yeah,
quite a while. Take your time.
Probably
we're
just like doing it and it just didn't work for some reason. Also, when I first played that game, it was great because no one knew how it worked, right? And when I first logged into GTA Online, like I made my character and then the guy, I just went, go into the world, and he literally just dropped like 20 feet from the air naked, like at the Vinewood sign, and he just fell down like Mr. Bean, right? And he just dusted himself off, and then I just went and played, and I just missed the intro. I had to like watch it on YouTube later. Like, that's what happened. That was my GTA experience.
That's a good way to start it off.
Yeah, which is better than the actual intro.
Like, launch tick, basically.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty more of examples of launch day hiccups and road bumps in the future. It's definitely not the last thing we're ever going to see of this particular one. Oscar, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers. Oscar.
Studio this week. As we mentioned before, you can jump onto worldsfastestpizza.com to check out his game. It comes out on the 15th of March on Steam and Itch.io. We're giving away a couple of copies as well. Go to pixelsift.com.au.
The box here.
Have
a look. Even show that off for
The video stream. If you're checking on that, you can have a look
Zeta
at that.
Zeta Giga Drive.
Inside that is just a code, right? Yeah.
Inside that, actually. Might be like,
is there anything in
Sonic
it?
The Hedgehog 2, actually.
Oh, no, there's nothing.
Jump on over to pixelsift.com.au/pizza if you want to enter that competition. Also check out our social media, which is Mitch.
Yes, the social media. Uh-huh. Yes, right. Yes, it's facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsift. AU.
And that's where you can watch all of our video episodes on there. But check it out because we'll put all the stuff on there. Scott, if people want to listen to our previous episodes, where are they going to head to?
You can go to our brand new website to stream episodes, subscribe as a podcast either on iTunes, Pocket Cast, or use the RSS link on our page.
Thanks very much for joining us, guys. We will see you guys again next week.
Peace out.
See ya.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.